you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, my name is Jason Schreier, and I am joined, as always, by Kirk Hamilton.
You are indeed. Hello.
And we are still here at GDC. This time, we are joined by Chris Hecker, the developer of Spy Party.
Yes.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, everyone.
The longest... So I was just saying before we recorded that there were always these games that would just pop up at IGF and
right.
at every single PAX, and
yep.
it was The Witness and Fez, and Monica was one of them, and there were a couple others, and then Spy Party.
Yes.
And I think Spy Party is the only one that hasn't come
okay,
out
so
yet.
Wait. So just to be fair, like Mega Curry is often in that list, and
okay.
he hasn't come out yet.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So
that's fair.
I have at the ready the list of other games that
sure
haven't shipped
do.
Yet,
yeah.
just to defend against
you got
this
it
question.
All right on top of yeah. So when did you start making it? 2009.
Well, so it depends on how you count. So okay. I got laid off from Maxis. So Spore shipped in 2008.
Okay,
and then I worked on it for another year. Which we can talk about if, or not, whichever. I mean, I've talked about that a bunch before. But
yeah.
So then I told them I wasn't going to work on another game there. I would work on technology, but I wouldn't want to make... It was a creatively interesting project.
Yes.
Which,
mm-hmm.
yes. So I was working on stuff like the Sporepedia backend and just doing hard technical problems and stuff. But like
uh-huh.
EA makes games. And so they, you know, I was like... So they laid me off. I would have laid me off too. So they laid
yeah.
me off at the end of 2009. And I was probably going to quit January 2010, but would I have? I have no idea. But so
right.
I got the boot, and like it made me actually go, I'm going to do the Spy Party thing full time. Because what had really happened, so if you want to really make this look like a bad question.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
So that would be, so that's end of 2009 to now, which is almost nine, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, so 8 years now, but it'll be nine at the end of 2018. Right?
Yes.
Spy Party, the game, was created in an indie game jam like 4 years before that.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was called Sniper Party.
Okay.
And it was based on... So we made the indie game jam. Like, that was me and some other indie game developer friends, Sean Barrett, John Blow,
uh-huh.
a few others, Casey Miratori. And I think it was a second or third indie game jam. I was at On Spore. Excuse me. And we got... one of the themes of the indie game jam back then especially was... The industry back then was kind of calcified. Like nowadays, mm-hmm. there's so many wacky games out there, and it's
right.
great. And I feel like we had some small part in that, like this that jam mentality
sure,
of like
sure.
a lot of the indie things. But like back then, it was like you really just had these genre games, and that's it.
Yep.
And there was no really indie scene. Like Steam and stuff hadn't happened yet, really.
Right.
And so we did this indie game jam thing. As a like, hey, let's add some wackiness. Let's just take, you know, no commercial constraints. Just take a weekend on a theme,
mm-hmm.
usually a technical theme, so that you could do whatever game design you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then. And it worked out great. It was really fun, and we showed them at the GDC and stuff. But that year, since I worked at Maxis, I was like, you know, what the world really needs, in my opinion, back then, was more games about people. Like, not space aliens and, you know, orcs and stuff like that, because we've got plenty of those.
Right.
I mean, who doesn't like to kill an orc? But, like,
sure.
there's not a lot of, like, you know, Terms of Endearment games or whatever, right?
Right.
And just games about normal people. And so with Will's help, we got Maxis to let us use, and EA really, to let us use the Sims assets for an indie game jam. So we ripped all the Sims 1 assets off like 7 CDs. We had like 5 gigabytes, which in like, you know, back then
right.
was a lot.
Yeah.
And of content, all these animations, all these characters, and we built a little engine that allowed you to put them in our place and have them move around. So, and then we invited all our indie game jam friends
mm-hmm.
and, you know, people from Bungie and Looking Glass and the whole nine yards, and they came and made wacky games about people interacting.
Uh-huh.
And so... My role at Indie Game Jam was kind of always a midwife, never a mom kind of thing. Like, I never got a game done because I was always like, oh, the server's crashing. Okay, let me go fix that, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I would usually get, like, part of a prototype going. And at the time, there was a game the year before called Dueling Machine, which actually was a Ben Bova short story. The guy named Thatcher Ulrich had done this game about... The theme the year before was, or a couple years before that, was... 100,000 guys. We did how many? We had this. The original indie game jam idea was, wow, 3D graphics cards. I wonder how many Doom sprites that'll render. And it turned out 100,000 at 50 frames, 60 frames a second on Pentium 5 back then. Right.
Nice.
And it was like, okay,
nice.
Really, this is there's something here.
I
want right?
to see a video of that.
Yeah, I mean, you can download them all. Actually,
nice.
I mean, who God knows how many they'd render now.
Yeah,
I mean, this
right.
was like 2003 or something.
Uh-huh.
But And at the time, like, Total War was like, we have 800 guys. Uh-huh. Or like, 100, how about 100,000, you know? And so, like, I mean, they were all ugly Doom Sprite dudes. But, like, so we did, like, Angry God Bowling, where there was just a sea of dudes, and you rolled this ball across them. And it was like, you know, there were tons of funny games. Mm-hmm. But one of the games was based on this Ben Bova short story, which I've never read, called Dueling Machine, where there were, like, 30, he couldn't even use 100,000 guys in his city. It was too many guys. So he used 30,000 guys. One person was had a gun. And when it was a networked, it was a 1v1 game. Okay. And one person was the fugitive and was fleeing. And the picture of the fugitive was in the corner. And the other guy, so he was a unique. So that we had, like, you know, of normal people, it's hard to find normal people Doom Sprites. So he didn't want to use aliens. And so, but you can actually, like, piece together a bunch. You know, there were like 30 or 40 different types of people. Sure. So one of them was a unique guy. And the rest were just, like, seeded from all the rest of those people. And you went around. And then Mark LeBlanc, who's an old Looking Glass guy and now is at Riot, had the idea of doing a sonar ping. So you could have some...
Like, yeah, there has just, to be some method of fighting people.
Yeah, there's
got to
be, exactly. Right. Well, yeah. And so you'd sonar ping and get like a stereo localized where it is, but he'd hear it too, so he knows if you're approaching. So it was a really great game. It was super awesome. It was one of the best games of that year.
What was that called again?
It was called Dueling Machine, and it's actually on the Indie Game Jam website. You can go download this game right now.
Okay.
I'm not sure the copyright status of the Doom Sprites in the zip file, but let's just not discuss that right now.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, So that was a great game, and it was super tense and fun and whatever, but it was, you know, and like, you know, the crowd would part like a wave because you had a gun, kind of. It was just like cool little details.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was like, we're doing the Sims one, the people interacting one, a couple years later, and I was like, man, Dueling Machine was great. I wonder what the intimate version of that is. Like, people in a room, like, it was just a really interesting mechanic, and because, you know, we were using actual 3D assets and, like, you know, and I wanted these games to be more about the actual behavior and stuff. I was like, oh, well, what if someone's trying to hide in a room? And then as soon as I was like, oh, it could be a spy in a room with a sniper outside, like, the game just designed itself. Like, at that point, you're just like, oh, duh. And then there's, like, missions. And so I didn't get it done, thank goodness, at this Indie Game Jam, which we can look up the date, but, like, it was 2007, six, something like that. Yeah, we would have been like, got 2003 it. Was the first one, and then the next year, so it would have been like either 2 or 3 years later. Whatever, we can find out. It's not that hard, but yeah, so it would have been like 2005 through 2007, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And I called it Sniper Party.
A good name,
right?
A good name.
Yeah, not a bad name. Works. I registered sniperparty.com. Nice. not now, but I did once I realized.
Yeah, yeah.
But and then I didn't get it working. Like, there were some people milling around, but, like, then I had to, like, fix a server crash or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, the source code control stopped working. And then I'm on Spore, and had basically forgotten about it. I had done some game design stuff on Spore, but, like, the creature animation stuff was on fire, so I needed to, like, actually focus on that. And so I gave up any game design stuff. And so I was kind of a little bit creatively frustrated from the design perspective. And Spore is an amazing project as a programmer, solving hard technical problems.
Mm-hmm.
But as a designer part, the designer part of me was like, I really want to kind of make a game.
Right.
And so I negotiated a contract with EA. I negotiated an addendum to my employment contract that let me work on games outside, as long as I didn't sell them, which is pretty cool.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
it was great. So... And I was like, man, I remember that Sniper Party game. I should resurrect that. And so what I did is I found the code on some old hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And I still had the Sims assets at the time. And I got it working. And Will, I talked to Will about the idea. And
Will Wright.
And he's like...
just Will.
Everyone knows Will.
No big deal.
Sorry to all the other Wills in the industry. Because he was kind of like kind of your crazy uncle on Spore, right? Like, he was like, yeah, we can go to him when you got, you know, talk to anybody about design things or wacky. Let's bounce ideas off of you. So I was like, I got this kind of cool idea. What do you think of this? And I told him Spy Party, a Sniper Party at the time. He's like, that's never going to work.
Challenge accepted.
And, yeah, exactly. And he's like, it's going to be too easy to find out who the person is, the player is, right?
Interesting.
Now, you guys played yesterday, and so now you know that is not the problem.
No,
that is not the problem.
Right, and so, but if you think about it, it's like how bad AI is,
right?
And how, like, you'd think, I mean, it's an understandable, like, assumption. He's been around computers a long time. AI suck, humans are, you know. And so I was like, all right, the first thing I need to do is disprove that statement or prove it right and then give up. But and so what I did is I got Sniper Party working in Ballroom, which is the map, one of the maps you guys played on when I was training you. It didn't look quite like that.
Right.
It looked more like a box with some polygons on one side. But I just had the Sims characters playing animations milling around, and I put one on the controller and you could walk around. And then I frapsed it and I sent it to some friends. I'm like, can you see me here? And you had no idea who I was, right? Because there's like 20 people in there and like whatever. Right. I was like, all right, at least as a base level. Because, like, if you think about it from a design perspective, if it's too easy to see who the spy is, mm-hmm. you're kind of screwed.
Right.
If it's too hard, you can make it more obvious, mm-hmm. and you're right. okay. You can save that. That's the case you want.
You want to start on the impossible to play,
and then you yeah. can like make tells. They have to, you know, like when bugging the ambassador, like a ding goes, or who knows, whatever. Right, you can do a bunch of stuff.
I've kind of heard that in general, right? It's generally, that's like why early access games tend to be very difficult.
That actually gets to a thing, which was the fundamental design. I guess I should say the fundamental meta design goal of Spy Party. I mean, there's a bunch of design aesthetics, like, you know, perception and deception and things like that, making consequential decisions with partial information. All that, we can go into those. But the fundamental meta thing about the way I was going to make it was based on this Rob Pardo, who used to work at Blizzard, used to be the design director. During Spore, he gave a talk at GDC Austin where he talked about Blizzard's design methodologies. And one of them, was... depth first, accessibility later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so you get the 300-hour or 100-hour core game going and then figure out how to make it accessible. But without that 100-hour core game, why are you bothering?
Sounds like the opposite approach of Destiny 2.
Well, and Spore. We did... I'll be even harsher. We did accessibility first, depth never.
Right.
Right? We what at Maxis is kind of a cute name. We call it Kleenex testing, basically, like, because you use a tester and then throw them away, like a Kleenex. Like, you know, when you're doing usability testing, you need that naive eye.
Right,
as a designer, I mean, this is true as a musician or a painter or anything. Like, being able to cultivate that naive eye to towards your own work is so hard and so important.
Yeah. Getting fresh ears.
Exactly. It's so important. But it's a skill and it's different. And like with my game, at least it's a multiplayer game, so it's different every time. With John Blow's games, like a puzzle game, like how do you approach a puzzle for the first time?
I've talked to him about that.
Yeah, it's a really hard thing. So like it's hard in creative work in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's even harder, you know, if you're a journalist and don't do any other kind of writing, like just reading it again, like I used to write for Game Developer Magazine, like you're reading it and for the 5,000th time. Trying to spot something, you're like, oh god.
Right.
So, we did all that accessibility testing on Spore, but we never got the 100-hour game, and you can feel it in the game, right? I mean, Spore, I loved working on Spore, and I think Spore had more magic in it per moment than most games. Like when the creature comes alive, or like you're building the thing, or you first zoom out on the planet. There's amazing magic moments in that game,
sure,
but it never cohered, in my opinion, as a core game design.
That was all there was.
And the creature editor was fucking awesome.
It was like a big tech demo. Yeah, you can.
Okay,
it was like a big tech demo.
Yeah. And like, I mean, when we released the creature editor first, and like Something Awful Forums went nuts and did all these amazing, crazy creatures, that was great. But the game didn't follow through on that check. It couldn't cash the check we wrote.
No Man's Sky. I feel like when people compare No Man's Sky to Spore. While they had some visual similarities, really, I think that's what people were talking about more than anything.
Is that
there was this magic at first, like this,
And
then the kind of it's almost like a crestfallen.
Well, so when they first came out, and Sean they like did that first trailer, and I was like, "What?"
Yeah.
I was like, "I didn't have the what? I had the oh no,
oh no,
oh no."
I can tell this is.
You knew from the beginning. Okay, so wait a minute.
So back to the question in hand. I was like, I am doing depth. So I sent out that lecture to the Spore mailing list. I was like, we need to be doing this depth first, accessibility later thing. Like, we need to be doing this. I was like, and it just was this mantra I repeated to myself that when I do Spy Party, because by that point I'd started working on an hour a night or whatever, you know?
Right.
And I was like, I am doing depth first, accessibility later. And that's kind of why it's... So part of the reason it's taken so long is like, it is a very deep game. I mean, you guys scratched the surface yesterday.
It is. I almost feel like, should we like stop for a second and explain, like describe our experience with it? Just because... I feel like people have gotten the gist of the game. A lot of people know it. People maybe don't.
Yeah, go ahead.
So let's just, like, Jason and I went to a hotel suite with Chris Hecker yesterday, sat down, played this game, two laptops across from one another. Spy Party is basically a game where one of you is a spy at a party that is populated with AIs. You're pretending to be an AI, basically. You want to blend in as much as possible. The other person is sitting outside with a sniper rifle.
And one bullet.
They have one shot, and they're following along. And so it's this very, very tense experience of, can the spy pull off a couple of things? You know, go talk to one person or switch out a statue.
Plant a bug on the ambassador. Basically, the missions are all tropes from spy and mystery fiction.
And they're all kind of like little things that have very, very subtle tells. But generally, if you're careful, you're kind of blending in with everybody. And can the sniper spot them? So Jason and I played this game yesterday. We had our share of wins and losses.
Yeah. And wouldn't leave the hotel room, which is a good sign.
We wanted to keep going. Playing. Jason really wanted to get one last win since I beat him on one.
Well, because you beat me 3-2.
Yeah.
So I was very upset about
that. Jason was not having that. This game is fun, though. I mean,
once you start getting into it, you can really, as the playing as the spy, you can find a lot of clever ways to mimic the AI and like fool. There are a lot of misdirection tricks you can use to try to fool the sniper.
I've played games like this before, and you know, watching watching it, watching the game, getting ready to play the game, having Chris explain the game to us, there's a lot going on. I mean, this is a very, very complicated game. There are a million, I think, mechanics and systems.
Yeah, the tutorial is like an interactive tutorial. And
there's so much going
on. Almost 40 minutes to play.
So having played, I don't know, like a game like Assassin's Creed or something like the multiplayer in that, where you're kind of pretending to be AI and blending in, there's a level of specificity to this game, I found at least, where just because it's me versus you, we're head-to-head at a table, and it's just one moment that we're building toward. And it's just, it's going to be this shot. Jason's either gonna, he's probably going to take the shot, and it's either going to work or it's not. There isn't anything more than
that. Yeah, so there's more
really
about that.
Like, so
Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and there's an old game on Steam called The Ship, which are both games of Assassin, which is that college campus game where like there's a hat, and all our names are in the hat, and you pick my name, and he picks your name, and then you're chasing me, and I'm chasing him.
Right. So it's a more cyclical thing.
It's asymmetric in the sense that it's a different person you're chasing than is chasing you, but it's locally, it's completely symmetric in the sense that everyone is chasing and being chased, right?
And has a sort of similar moveset, similar skills.
And so what happens there, and so I thought about this a lot, of why Spy Party actually is different and deeper than those games.
Yeah.
Because The Ship came out before Spy Party, obviously, and then Assassin's Creed Brotherhood came out after Spy Party. And so it's like, you know, people are like, oh, how is it different from this or whatever? So I thought about this a lot.
It's very different.
Yeah, it's very different. And so at first, when Assassin's Creed multiplayer started coming out, because it was Brotherhood when it came out, I was like, oh, shit. But then I was like, oh, okay, they're just doing Assassin, and I know how the game's different from Assassin now.
Right.
And so what the difference is, Spy Party is 100% asymmetric. Right. There is no way for the spy to get around behind the sniper and stab him in the back with a knife.
Right.
So
the
sniper does not have to worry about watching their back at all. I can take 100% of the sniper's brain power and devote it towards the party, which means I can make the tells way more subtle.
Right.
So the spy also knows they have to commit to the deception part of it.
Yep.
Right? Because if you get what happens in Brotherhood multiplayer is... you get someone who's better at combat or whatever, or it's like jumping around roofs, and they're like, well, screw this like hiding in plain sight thing.
There's
I'm just going to wait for somebody to like do it and then just do the pylon thing.
When you're playing as the spy, there's never a moment where you're thinking, other avenue to victory.
Exactly. Like I'm going to shoot back or anything
like
that.
Right.
So you have to commit 100% to the deception thing or you're toast.
Right.
And so by doing that, and I didn't know this event. It's not like a super genius where I was like, oh, this is how it's different a priori before I even did it.
Right.
It was more just like, oh, this is working. Why aren't those other games working at the same level? It's like, oh, I see. It's because each person is totally committed to their role.
Right.
And so people don't make completely asymmetric games most of the time because they're really hard to balance, right?
Yep.
And this is what we can talk about there. Some interesting psychological balance stuff that kind of makes for fun anecdotes to talk about. We didn't talk about the Bastion anecdote about the 8 years thing. We got to get back to that too. But
We will.
Yeah,
we got a running list of things to get back to.
By diving into the completely asymmetric thing, it unlocks this thing that no one knew was there just because like you can't get to it in that more locally asymmetric but globally symmetric game like Assassin. I mean, those are cool games. Those are fun to play.
Sure.
Yes.
But they don't seem to have, like my top players have 20,000 games played over 1,000 hours at 3 minutes a pop. Like it's way deeper than those games, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's great. Mm-hmm. And I want more people, like I have a list of clones and demakes and people who have made similar games that are, I mean, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and The Ship are on there as like, you know, other games that are similar. I have a list of those in the FAQ. People are like, aren't you worried about getting cloned or things like that?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I want more games in this area. I want people to explore. It's just such unexplored territory. Like you can just pick up game design off the ground as you're walking around because just nobody does games about normal people.
Right, Nobody does games about psychological tricks and mind games. Okay, so Bastion anecdote.
Oh, yeah. So it was last night was the Supergiant Hello Cocktail Party, but you were talking about the 8 year thing and this list
the
games.
Yeah.
And so John and I were working on The Witness at my house one day.
Uh-huh.
And we got this email from this guy, Amir, who worked at EALA.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, can I come show you my game? And he and Greg came over and showed this prototype for this game, Bastion.
Wow.
So they've lapped me three times.
Yeah, they released three games.
Incredible.
Very good games.
Okay, so wait a minute. So without getting into immense detail.
Amir has been giving me production advice lately.
Yeah, right. You need it.
He's been rearranging my schedule.
Without getting into immense detail, how did it take so long?
Well, so it's a... So there's probably three or four different things. So some of the top ones are I'm just slow, period.
Okay.
Like, I'm slow. Like, I think I do good work. Like, the Spore Creature animation system is really pretty cool, but, took, like, a year longer than we thought it would. Like, I'm just slow for whatever. Like, I tend to dive into problems that are pretty hard, and I have no idea how long they're going to take, and I totally underestimate how much work they are, and then I tell people numbers, and then they get mad at me. And producers hated me at EA, right?
And it's funny. I wouldn't peg you as a slow guy. You're very, very
fast moving.
I just am not, like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of, if this was a longer podcast, we could go into the psychology of working on something for 8 years and things like that. And it's, you know,
we'll keeping save yourself, that. We'll
keeping
save
your,
that.
Keeping
next
yourself
time.
Healthy during that is a really, I mean, that, that's actually like become a theme in indie game development.
Yes.
Actually, good. It's good. People are talking about mental health and things like that. There was a really good talk at GDC a few years ago by what's his name, who did the backwards playing guitar matching, you know, guitar controller shooter where the lasers go into your spaceship. What the hell was it called?
Oh, PS4. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, how can I not remember his name? Matt.
From Harmonix, right? Didn't he work at Harmonix?
No.
Not
did
that
he work
Matt.
At, from Harmonix? They use, where are the funny, I'm just totally spacing.
Yeah,
GDC
yeah.
brain. Anyway, but he had talked about having OCD, like real OCD. Not like, haha, I forgot where my keys are, but like real, actual, you know, on medication. And like, it's just people are talking about that stuff more and more. So like, I go to therapy a lot. Like, I mean, my therapist knows way more about indie games than any other therapist in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
She's like, how's your Steam Early Access date going? And like, this is like, you know, so, but keeping yourself healthy and during that long development cycle is hard. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job about that. And so I'd much rather be slow and healthy than kill myself and be a year earlier. So I try to be really careful on that. I have a daughter and like, so I try and take time and do the right thing. Nice. And like, I'm trying to make the game as perfect as possible and the game's really good already. So I'm not worried about, I'm worried about running out of money. There's like, there are some logistical aspects of taking 8 years.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that too.
Yeah, we can talk about that. I gave a talk at IndieCade that if people want to look it up, that broke down all the finances. But basically like, I used to work at Microsoft in the 90s. So I had a few $100,000 from that and then a few $100,000 from EA. And then the game sold 25,000 copies on SpyParty.com, which is another few $100,000, but all that's spent, and I borrowed a little bit more money. Because I have an artist full-time at a AAA game industry salary.
Right.
And there's me. I have a pretty good mortgage for the Bay Area, but it's still like, it costs money to live in the
San
Bay
Francisco.
Area. Yeah, exactly. And so...
So you were saying, so perfectionism, what are the other reasons?
So I'm slow. Perfectionism, those are related.
You're taking
presumably.
Care of yourself.
The big ones,
trying to take care of yourself and not, you know, crunch all the time. Like, I'm crunching right now just because it's like the end days here right before Steam Early Access. But, and it's just a really complicated, deep game. Like, it's like my, I have notebooks full of ideas and things, and like a lot of the stuff is like community management and working with the community on like playtesting things. And, you know, it's just a giant game for one person. I mean, let's put it this way. Most people, like, I have an artist, right? But I did all the original art for the shitty art myself, right?
Art.
Yeah.
It had a charm to it.
It's still in there because the Grognard hardcores won't let it go. So I'm going to have to hide it so you don't accidentally trip across it as a new Steam player.
That's
but
funny.
Like, it's got to be in there. And plus, I have this insane replay system. We didn't really play with it very much, but like, all your games are on my hard drive now, and we can go back and scrub through when you highlight. It's crazy. It's like a AAA quality replay system.
Huh.
Like, people play it and they're like, I've never seen a game that has this. You can rewind and scrub. You can snipe against a replay and play the same game.
So you can play the level
exactly. So you can like, it's insanely off the, and I have
that's cool.
over 300,000 games archived in the
You just
database.
Have like a huge hard drive somewhere?
Well, it's on my server. It records the games, and that's how the spectation system works too. Mm-hmm. And so eventually I'm going to make a replay database that you'll be able to go like, I want all of Bob's games where he won on balcony as spy with this mission loadout.
Huh.
And you can study for a tournament.
Yeah,
right? And so
I mean,
when you want to do this esporty kind of thing, like do those kinds of features are awesome.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So part of it is casting mode. It has a split screen modes, you can watch the spy and the sniper simultaneously, so casters can use it.
Oh, there was one thing you told us to ask you about on the show, which was one versus multiple people.
Oh, yeah. So that is built into the same thing. Like, so basically what happens is the... I don't want to get too technical. I mean, I don't know how technical people are, but like the spy is what's called the server, and they simulate all the AIs and everything. And
that's
they
why
send,
the spy picks the level first.
Yeah, exactly. And then they send the sniper is kind of a dumb client in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They send animation commands for where the characters are moving and stuff to the sniper. It doesn't send who the spy is or anything like that.
Right.
But like, you know, and so the sniper's kind of playing back a little bit, and then the sniper sends where the laser is back to the spy. But it's much narrower communication than like all the animations and all that stuff
going.
Excuse me, even things like sound effects play on the sniper spy machine and then get sent over, right? You know, play the sound effect as a clank from dropping a statue or whatever, right?
Yeah. Right.
And the game's really latency tolerant. Like, I run the sniper machine about a second behind the spy machine because it doesn't really matter that much except for the laser feedback, and it smooths over any. Like, I don't have to localize. For my matchmaking, I don't have to have geographically nearby people because it's, you know, I can have someone from Australia play someone from Poland, and it's a fine game because of this. It's not
ping
dependent.
Not so
what does this have to do with?
Well, so... The spectation basically is kind of like watching the sniper's stream with some added information. So you're kind of just getting the same thing.
There's just so little for
I was
you
like,
to send
once
out.
I was like, and so I shoot locally on the sniper's machine. So I override the animations. When you shoot on the sniper machine so that it feels good, it kills the person immediately. It overrides whatever animation's playing, kills that person, and then sends it to the spy and goes like, was that the spy or not, right?
Yeah.
Okay. once I had that code in, I was like, oh, you could just have a bunch of snipers all playing at the same time, shooting, send all the lasers back to the spy machine, and then you're playing 1VN with all the code I currently have.
Yeah. Really?
And then you could do this crazy Iron Man thing where, because I shoot locally, you don't even have to kill the spy on the spy's machine. They can just keep playing with this digit in the corner. Like, you've got 40 snipers on you right now.
Wow.
Okay, three of them have shot civilians. One of them shot
you. And there are laser pointers? So you're the guy from the movie
the laser pointers.
With 20 laser pointers?
Yeah, you can either show all the laser pointers for the total insane mode.
To or
you
just
could,
freak
like,
people
maybe
out.
Maybe you show the top of the leaderboard laser pointers. Like, anybody with, you know, the highest ranked players, the highest ranked five, so it's not just total chaos.
To explain this to people, just so I think, I don't know if I said this, but when you're the spy walking around, you can see a laser pointer coming from.
Right, which is the center of the sniper's machine.
Right.
Screen. It doesn't mean they're looking there. Because you can look off to the side, but it means you know kind of where the cone of their vision is.
Right. So when I'm playing against Jason, there's a point, one of the times where you had made me, and I just have this laser sight on
it. Yeah, and so the fans call it laser burning.
Yeah,
And so you laser burn someone, and you'll laser burn, they'll laser burn somebody, and then look at somebody else. So you'll drop the laser on somebody while they're at statues.
Right.
That guarantees they're not going to swap, and then you look at some other thing.
Right.
So they
think
you're looking, so now it's just this Yomi thing all the way down. So the spy who's seeing the laser burn on an NPC over there thinks you're looking at that, and then they do a mission, but you're actually looking at them, and then you swing over and shoot.
A lot of psychological. So you guys are coming out in early access soon, is what all you've said so far.
We're gonna announce a date soon.
So the big question I have is, so when me and Kirk played and we were sitting in the same room, we had a blast together. But I think one of the reasons for that is because we were in the same room playing across from one another.
Right.
I imagine it is logistically tough to release this one versus one game and convince people to how are you selling it to people?
Right.
As
I mean, it works pretty well. I mean, obviously the optimal experience is the experience you had. The
Need two computers.
You can hear. Well, there's two computers thing. I want to do some crazy thing where there's a multi-mon thing. Like, if you have two monitors plugged in, it'll put a controller. Yeah. One person on WASD and one person on the controller, because that's not that hard. But anyway, again, like I said, the list of stuff you can do with this game is insane. Right. So that's partly an answer.
I can see why it took 8 years.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, so that's the optimal social experience for sure. But it works really well online.
Right.
I mean, it's because it's such a thoughtful thing. Like, you noticed you guys were like trash talking in between, but when the game was going on, there was no trash talking.
Because you're consumed. I was watching your left thumbstick a little bit.
Yes. So that's
I was like, when is Jason
going to
start moving
around? What I was
going
to say was, there's two downsides to playing in person. Mouse clicks. You guys were using controllers, right?
Yeah.
So that or mouse clicks. You can hear those, and it's a huge.
And I feel like
a big
moment at the beginning of the match is when the spy is not controlling the spy.
Right.
So it was only I really looked for it. So I was like, is Jason controlling it?
Yeah.
I kind of just looked up a couple times and you were, and I was all right. I'm
exactly. So that extra channel of communication is huge because you have so little to go
and without
on.
Without that, it would definitely make the game a lot more pure,
I guess. But so, like, I mean, that's obviously cheating in some sense. It's cheating, but it's more of a casual thing. But so it works really well online because really you're so consumed while you're playing that after the game's over, then there's text chat in the game.
Right.
And so you're just like, why'd you shoot me? Oh, and then, you know, people talk and then they play the next game.
Right.
So it actually works really well.
And you can go watch the replay, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And people get on Discord and stuff like that if they want. But for top end matches, like for tournament level matches, people don't want to talk at all, period. They're in the zone and they've studied and they're trying to keep from tilting and all the normal fighting game kind of things.
How has the tournament thing been? Like, do you see this becoming a major tournament?
I'm designing it. I mean, you get all these companies that are big game companies, we're making the next esport. Big companies to some extent, we're just going to buy our way into esports. Obviously, I'm not doing that. I just am making as hardcore a competitive multiplayer game as I can, and we'll see what happens. It's very different. It's a way slower pace than a game where there's blowing shit up all the time and stuff like that. So I have no idea whether that appeals to anyone in the esport world. We were at Evo.
What I'm thinking of.
So Evo invited us 2 years in a row because they, the first year and the second year they did this, they were fighting game people don't just like fighting games. Like, the FGC, the fighting game community, they just love competition.
Yeah.
Especially, one versus one.
So Seth was a fan of Spy Party, Seth Killian.
Right.
And he's like, you guys should come and we'll see. And he bet me that my top player a year later would be somebody from the FGC.
Uh-huh.
And he was right.
Yeah.
Like, I had to get him a beer. And, of course, I got him banana bread beer. Banana bread being
the
code word for Contact
the
Double Agent. And so, but this guy KCM, Corey is his real name, came, was walking through the Evo thing. He's a big Street Fighter player.
Uh-huh.
And or BlazBlue or one of those. If you don't, he's going to listen to this. He's not going to be Street Fighter. I'm going to be in deep trouble. So I don't know. You also can't say the word esports in the FGC.
No, you have to
say competitive games. So
it's
like,
not allowed.
You have to but he was walking by. He's like, and he told me the story later. He's like, what's the Sims thing doing here? And he sat down and he's got 19,700 games or something now. It's insane. Like, he's the number two player
impressive.
Right now.
Wow,
but my number one player is a lawyer. And so it's just
Have they played against each other?
Yeah, because there's a ladder, and so they're all Diamond Division.
Oh, okay. You know, nice. Like, they're always in there against
yes,
each other.
Yes, I'm not Diamond Division. But so I would love it. I mean, it's clearly a deep enough, competitive enough game for that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That kind of thing, especially at indie scale, has to just happen. I can't make that happen. No. I'm trying to add like all the spectation stuff and all the casting stuff. I'm trying to add all the stuff so that it's possible for it to happen, but who knows? I mean, I know the game is deep enough for that to happen. Right. Whether that happens is dependent on a whole bunch of luck variables and all other stuff that I don't have control
so
over.
So when people play competitively, do they just play spy or just play sniper? Or is it
no,
both?
No, you have alternate. To play both. Because one of the right. things, so that gets to some balance things that we could talk about here really briefly. Like when you're making a totally asymmetric game, because right. like when I started making Spy Party, like people were like, an asymmetric game was something like StarCraft, mm-hmm. which is kind of asymmetric in the sense that the Zerg is different from the Protoss. But, yeah. like, I mean, they're basically the same game with some right, different stats, right? right? Whereas Spy Party is literally two different video games right, in the same space, right? And so I try to keep it balanced. So you'd think at first that 50... So I'll answer your question first, and then we'll go off on the kind of funny anecdote about this. So there's a 50-50 game balance you'd think you'd want to get, Spy, right. Sniper, win, right? Right. That's incredibly difficult to get with two completely different video games. And we hover around like 45-55, a little bit sniper bias, but that's pretty good. I'm pretty proud of how that's come out.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of knobs for
tuning. Well, Spy is tougher to play, too.
Well, a bit different people think different roles are tougher to play, which is an interesting
thing.
That
is interesting.
Yeah, some people
think it's tougher to emulate AI than it is to recognize.
I bet it differs at different skill levels, too. We were both rookies.
But also,
playing a rookie spy is much harder, and being a rookie sniper is easier when you're playing a rookie.
But I've actually found it differs on player personality. Some people get stressed out as sniper because they just don't know what's going on. Right. Whereas
you have to commit as sniper.
Yeah, and spy. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one of the aesthetic themes of the game is like consequential decisions with partial information. You're like, it's kind of like, I think of that as a kind of modern design aesthetic. Like global warming is that. Like we don't know 100%. We're pretty sure.
Right.
We got to commit to a path.
Right,
you know? And so it's like pulling that into like making people more comfortable. Poker's like that. Like making people more comfortable with like a statistical model of the world rather than knowing something crystalline wise. Right. It's a really modern design thing. So that's one of the things I kind of focus on. Hmm. So I kept trying to tune the game to be 50-50 because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Sure.
And the players kept, so there's a lot of knobs in the game, like how many missions you do, how many people are at the party, how much time you have. Those things all biased towards spires. I mean, they kept picking game modes that were sniper biased. I'm like, what the hell, people? Come on. Like, we've got all the knobs. Let's get it back to 50. So we go to like 45, 55, 40,
interesting.
40, 60. And I'm like, okay, let's dial it back here, you know, whatever. And then I finally realized, and there's some debate in the community whether this is true, but it's such a good theory that it's got to be true, right?
Okay.
So the theory I realized was it's more fun to lose as spy than it is as sniper. Mm. So here's my pitch on this idea. And tell what you guys think since you played now.
Okay.
When you're the underdog as spy, and you pull it out, you're freaking James Bond. Mm-hmm. You're like, yes, I totally did it. You know, like he had me made and I still got that last mission in. And then like I walked around the pillar at the right time, whatever. When you're losing as sniper, you're just like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
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 And so they tend to pick spy underdog game meta so that feeling, so it's more psychologically balanced, like better way to put it is it's emotionally balanced when it's sniper biased. Mm. That's my theory.
Interesting.
And I'm sticking with it.
It makes sense.
So we have to wrap things up.
Okay.
We'll have you come back on and we'll talk for longer next time. But so if people want to play, so it's coming into early access. When it comes into early access, is that's going to be the complete game, yes?
Yeah. So right now, the current situation, what I've done over the years is it used to be like friends and family, and then I opened it up to an email sign up, like invite thing. And now, right now, it's available on spyparty.com for $15 and you get the game and all the updates, and you get Steam keys and the whole nine yards. You'll get it forever, right? And you can see the delta of how the art has been over time. Like, it's slow going, but it really changes a lot. And it's like, I've got tons of design stuff I want to do. So you can get it right now on spyparty.com and get in the community. Community is totally awesome. That's one of the nervous things about going on Steam. I'm like worried about my community because it's so great right now. And like, I don't know if that scales. So that's another thing to talk about later. So you can get it right now and you'll get all the updates and you'll get it on Steam when it launches and stuff like that. And so it's got a ton more stuff I want to do once it launches on Steam Early Access. I assume once it launches on Steam Early Access, I'm going to have frenzied bug fixing for a couple months while I try and get things
done. So is that version going to be different than the version you get
now?
No,
it'll just be an update.
It'll be the same version.
Yeah. So you can get it now. So
if people,
some people don't like to like put their credit card into a PayPal link on some random dude's webpage. So if you're not comfortable with that...
So people listening to it have never heard of the game, want to check it out, but are like, oh, early access, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they're getting the full game.
And they'll get all the updates and all the updates until it's 1.0 and
I mean is the early access version, it's Spy Party. It's
you'll get the exact
beta
same
version.
No, it is a beta in the sense that I'm not calling it done. But
it's not like... I don't know, Ark Survival Evolved, where it's full of bugs and it's like
right. I mean, you guys played the game. Like, I mean, there are right. bugs for clearly,
but it feels very.
But
finished.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, people have played 20,000 games yes. and for thousands of hours. Yes, like, it is right. a good game already. Knock on wood.
Yes,
I can still screw it up. I still reserve the right to totally screw up my game, but the hope right now it's yes, working out right, really right. well.
Okay, Chris. Well, we hope that you do not screw it up.
Me too.
And yeah. I'm very much looking forward to playing it. And people can check it out on Steam soon. And is it can they pre-order on Steam now, or is it just like,
there's no pre-orders? But, no, but Spy, just, I mean, if you want to play now,
go to SpyParty.com, download it,
or wait until it's on Steam.
Wait until it's on Steam. Very cool. It is really cool.
You can wish list it on Steam. There's a Steam page. They can wish list it there.
Right.
Yeah.
Good luck
thank
to you
so
on the
much.
Steam launch.
And I'm glad you guys had fun yesterday playing it.
We did.
Yes, we will no doubt. We will talk to you in the near future, awesome. Get you back on the show, and you can talk forever about all sorts of things. Thank you very much,
thanks.
Chris.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Jason Schreier and me, Kirk Hamilton. I edit and mix the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR Now, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope that you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen. Email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.